Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 1st of September, recording at 8:17 p.m. British Summer Time. Well, on my first day back from a longish holiday, I've got to say, I feel like a kid in a candy shop. Sad, isn't it? But what else can I say? These are incredibly exciting markets, and I love the business and producing this service for you people. Okay, what's going on in here today? This is one of the most exciting days that I've actually seen. And there are some very significant moves that have actually taken place. The most significant of those is the weakness of the US dollar. Now, I'll come back to that, but I really think I should revert first to my usual format, which commences with the global stock markets. Now, here, the really interesting situation is the upward moves that we've seen in the last few days. Now, this has checked the last couple of days, really, for most of these indices, 2 or 3 days, and these have checked the rather gradual downward trends that we had seen for most of the global stock market indices. Now, when Owen and I discussed these, there was a considerable difference that we both commented on. And one, if you went back to March, you looked back at March on the charts, when we saw that sharp, albeit relatively short-lived, let's call it one of the smaller of the medium-term corrections, or shorter of the medium-term corrections, the moves downwards began with some very clear upward dynamics, which were then countermanded by some pretty good upward dynamics in the middle of April. And markets, the rest, you know, is history. Well, when Owen pointed out a while back that the stock markets had sort of lost upward momentum and that the risks had gone up, then we subsequently saw corrections, as you will of course be well aware, but we didn't get the downward dynamics, nothing like that. In other words, it was sort of a gradual decline overall, which looked more like a consolidation or perhaps just a trading range before some of these markets pushed on into new high ground. And that's despite the rising oil price, of course, which has certainly been an interesting factor. So how do we make sense of all of this, and what does it indicate? Well, in a word, liquidity. Massive amounts of global liquidity sloshing around in the system. Now, that's been a factor really for quite some time, and it's certainly prevalent in here today as we see almost all markets moving upwards. Now, why all of a sudden in here right now, has there been a change in liquidity to go along with the sentiment? Well, one thing that certainly stands out in my mind, that if we have an oil problem, if the global economy has an oil problem, now I know there are all kinds of people who say, look, we're much more efficient users of oil, to which my riposte is, yeah, but we use more of the stuff. Or others who say, well, come on, adjust this all for inflation and oil is not back to the highs that we saw in the 1970s. Absolutely true. And that, but nevertheless, rising oil prices have got to be a problem for the global economy. And most specifically, they are likely to hit consumption. And that has a knock-on effect, and it's a little bit, as many have described it before, as a tax on the part of the oil producers, whether they've intended it to be that or it's just an event, and I think it's primarily just an event. Rising demand, a demand-dominated move, as I've emphasized in comment of the day, just posted. Now, I think that if we have, let's say, a problem, or at least a potential problem, in terms of higher oil prices, what are governments going to do? Are they going to just say, well, this is recessionary, and we're just going to have to, well, suck it and see, or if that sounds a bit crass, just live with it? And we'll see GDP growth go down, we'll see tax revenues fall, we'll see unemployment go up. Are they just going to put up with that? Or are they going to say, let's throw more liquidity into the system if that devalues some of their currencies? No problem there. That'll help their export markets. Most of them are actually going to include. And they can print more of the currency in the knowledge that the ruthlessly global competition in manufacturing, not least because of China's presence on the scene as the manufacturer of first and last resort, is keeping inflation in manufactured goods very, very low. And that features prominently in the inflation statistics that most countries actually produce. Then they can live with inflation in other areas, such as asset appreciation, and even go on and say that the asset appreciation is actually essential to keep some of these economies, such as the USA, ticking over at a reasonably respectable rate. So I think that it's a combination of two factors. The liquidity remains abundant, the spigots are open, and the markets, or investors rather, are interpreting that to be a very sound, most likely premise. So we're a lot well, awash with liquidity, and a lot of that is going into stock markets. Now, this is heady territory here for some of these stock markets, and we've got to keep in mind the fact that Wall Street really is lagging in here. Yes, it's had a couple of good days, but look at those charts. The U.S. market, particularly the Nasdaq, which is often a leading indicator, and the Dow. And to a somewhat lesser extent, the S&P, which has shown a little bit better relative strength throughout the year. But the trend is really basically sideways for Wall Street. So we've had a massive underperformance relative to other markets. Now, again, you've heard me go on interminably about the Wall Street leash effect, and meaning that if Wall Street is going sideways to higher, that does increase the slack and the leash as far as other stock markets are concerned, and where there's a good story, they will run and run particularly strongly. Conversely, when we get investors frightened, and particularly by a downward turn on Wall Street, clear loss of momentum and establishment of a downward trend, then other markets are under pressure. And if Wall Street continues to weaken, then, as I've said on many occasions, they'll get dragged down, and a good many of them will get dragged down even faster and further because they've risen faster and further. But right now, that is not the problem. We've actually seen Wall Street established some rather important short-term lows. Watch those lows that were established earlier this week. We can monitor those on the charts. While they hold, I wouldn't worry about stock markets here in the short term, despite some negative seasonal factors, which the markets have pretty effectively shrugged off, and despite the rising oil price, which markets have taken on board so far. And as long as the oil price is moving up on a, well, not too rapid basis, then investors are more likely to keep their nerve than not. No room for complacency in this environment overall, and I still think we're going to head into some trouble in 2006, if not before. But at the moment, the technical action that we've seen over the last 2, 3 days is really quite encouraging. Now, not least in some of the markets that I find much more interesting than others, one of my favorites, India, lost upward momentum after a phenomenal run. It lost upward momentum really, I think, in the end of July. But here we are testing the highs in here. Very, a very, very steady performance overall. Thailand, another favorite of mine, hasn't helped me much recently after that spectacular performance that we saw in 2003. We had a lengthy consolidation, an opportunity to pick up some more positions in things like the Aberdeen New Thai Fund, which I did, as some of you may recall. But it just basically ranged sideways. Well, today we saw quite an impressive looking break above some lateral resistance, which, if it holds, and I think it will, has cleared the way for a test of the highs at least. And I've said before, I felt this looked like a very big consolidation, and that it would be followed by another up leg in the Thai market. And then there's Japan, the best, in my view, long-term opportunity among the developed country stock markets. And we had the phenomenally exciting development of the completion of the Freudian slip there, the completion of the Nikkei and the Topix multi-year base formations. And we're still in that initial run-up stage that I do think will be followed by a pullback and possibly lengthy consolidation, which I would describe as the first step above the base. But Japan in recent years I've described as a buy on weakness, and I think that but saying all along that it was slow burn because it hadn't completed the base yet, and we didn't know when, or I didn't know when it was actually going to complete the overall base formation. Well, I take it as read that it has completed the base formation, but to get technical confirmation of that, we will need to see it find support around the 12,000 level on the Nikkei or above when we do eventually get that pullback. But it'll probably go a bit higher, higher first. And those who are invested in Japan, and I'm among them in some with some positions, really, I think can hang on in here unless we see evidence of a major global downturn in stock markets, and I'm not I'm looking for that right now. What else to mention in here? The European stock markets, again, very, very steady overall, saw a shakeout in line with the Wall Street pullback, but have shown some good upward dynamics in here recently. And some of the phenomenal leaders, such as Australia, are right back on the highs. And these markets look as if they can push higher in here. But as I said, I don't want to be looking too far into the future at this stage. We still have the seasonally problematic months of September and October to work our way through before we get into, well, early October, and before we get into the more favorable overall seasonal conditions. And we still have this oil situation, and if the price does push ahead extremely rapidly, I think there's no doubt that, in my mind at any rate, that that would unnerve investors in stock markets. But hey, as I was saying in July before I went away on holiday, make hay while the sun shines, and we may see a bit of a so-called Indian summer in here. All right, looking at the government bond markets overall, we've seen some pretty strong rallies. Main thing I conclude from that is that investors are saying that the long-term implications of the oil price rise are basically deflationary, or certainly anti-growth. And they've got a point there, but my view overall is that bond markets remain risky, and I think that we will soon see these bond markets encounter some technical resistance. Right now they're rallying back into areas of resistance. I'm thinking mainly of the JGBs, and that's the Japanese government bonds, of course, and the US long-dated issues. The European bond markets might do a little better because growth has been slower there. That's been the case all along. And the inflationary pressures are not quite so great. Okay, now this brings me on to this dollar issue. This really, really is important. And all but the newest of subscribers, and we had a number of new subscribers in August, and a big welcome from me to all of you. But chances are that most of you will recall some of the comments in July that I was making, and often seconded by Owen, I suspect, in his audios, although I haven't had a chance and probably won't get a chance to hear all those, although I have read pretty well all the comments of the day. And that was basically that the US dollar index had lateral and psychological resistance near the 90 level, that was an important resistance area, and the dollar index had balked up at that 90 level. And what then happened subsequently, it tested it three times in July, then fell back, started to fall back quite sharply, reaching a low in the first half of August, and got a technical rally which lasted 5 days and carried up just under the trading range near the highs. You can see this chart, I've posted it again in here today, and it was continuing to range. A little bit unnerving for those of us who are positioned for dollar weakness, as I certainly am. And in terms of my trading positions, they're virtually all positioned for dollar weakness. And yesterday we had a downward dynamic, encouraging sign, and today we had some terrific follow through here. And as I speak, after hours, US dollar index is trading at 86.55. And have a look at that chart. This really does add further technical evidence that we saw an important, at least medium-term peak in July, and I'm looking for further retracement in here. And I of the gains that we saw from the beginning of this year right on up into July. Now, when the dollar first came off in July, we unquestionably had a number of dollar bulls. Well, first people were heavily long because the dollar had been moving up. And when it lost momentum, fell back, then a number of people really chopped out of those dollar long positions, and maybe a few went short. But judging from the comments that you were seeing and that I was seeing, as far as the main Forex trading houses were concerned, those investment banks, they weren't really buying the dollar weakness story, at least not in the short term. They were saying that even if the dollar has peaked, or those who were saying that we think that the dollar's secular bear market or long-term bear market is still intact, that it's going to go higher in the short term, and mainly citing interest rate differentials as the reason why they expected that to happen. And interest rate differentials are important, but they're certainly not everything. And we have seen over the last 2 days some significant technical deterioration in the US dollar. And today, I think probably for the first time, judging from again from the chart action, we've seen some evidence that confidence in the US dollar is really eroding in here. In other words, this time people think, well, maybe we really have seen the high for the year and are coming lower. Now, I posted a number of charts, but since I've posted those, and it takes me a while, of course, to prepare those, but subsequently we've had further weakness. For instance, the euro is up to 1.25 as I speak. That's up over 150 ticks. And dollars down to 109.86 against the yen, and things like the Aussie and particularly the New Zealand dollar, those are the two positions I hold, have run ahead strongly in here. Now, another one of my themes from back in July was that given that the odds favored dollar weakness, one of my themes was that when the market sensed, when investors, the majority of investors, sensed that the dollar was weakening and was probably going to go back and test its lows on the dollar index, its historic lows, down at around the 80 level and a little below. And the dollar index, you may recall, fell close to that 80 level back in December last year. That if investors, a significant number of investors, thought that we were heading back down to test those levels, that precious metals would rally very strongly. I think I even said that they would take off. And that remains my view. And having said that today was the first day when I felt we had some real evidence that dollar sentiment towards the dollar had clearly deteriorated, we'd see some strong gains. Well, as I speak, gold is up 805. That's a pretty good move, taking it to 443.25. Note the rising lows within the current lengthy consolidation pattern for gold. And it's interestingly, there's been a lot of anti-gold talk that I've noticed recently, and that's with people saying that the dollar, I beg your pardon, that gold is no longer a monetary metal. Well, have a look at gold against various different currencies in the chart library. I'll be posting those probably sometime next week again, and talking about them a little bit more. So gold definitely remains a monetary metal in my view. It's always been a monetary metal, and I don't think that's ever going to change, although many people would not be too unhappy if it did change. Silver, big rebound in here today, pushing back above that $7 level, currently 705 on the December contract. Yes, I rolled my silver positions forward. I have a few positional changes. I'll detail those yesterday, but I can mention them in here today. So having said I would do that, I'll just step back a moment into the stock markets. Last week, I had switched out of my investment positions in BP, British Petroleum, and I put that money into the Investec Global Energy Fund, the UK listed fund. I'll have the details of that tomorrow. I'd always said that I wanted to buy more of the Investec and that I would look to pick it up on a setback where we had a small setback, and we haven't seen many of those, have we? And so I took that opportunity to make the switch. First, it was outperforming BP more often than not, and I had all the risk in owning one oil share. And Tim Guinness, who manages those funds, really, really does know his business, and I feel safer, and I feel I'll get better performance there. Okay, and I picked it up on a 2% spread. It is a front-end load fund, but it made that up fortunately on the second day. Okay, those are the positional changes that I've had. I said rolling the silver forward, and I'm mighty glad that I did it. Platinum in here, and very good day. That had a thump earlier in the week. But back at 903.4 in the after hours trading, that's up $8.9 and looking interesting as long as it holds above the 880 level. Industrial metals all strong in here today, but I think if the dollar is weakening, the precious metals are perhaps an even more exciting story. But you know, I still like my supply and elasticity theme overall. Soft commodities, an embarrassment for me and a disappointment recently has been the cocoa market. A terrific rebound in here today, closing at 850 for the September contract, which expires in another fortnight. That's up 32. Is that quoted in pounds? I think it is in pounds. 32 pounds. That's at 850. That's quite a good move. Clear upward dynamic. And I'm just looking at that US market, cocoa December. I'm looking at the December contract closed up $92 at $14.96. So again, powerful upward dynamics, potentially downside failures and/or near historic lows. So I think I'll hold on to that one for a while longer, although I'll need another day on the upside to eliminate my now small positional losses and put it into profit. And I think that's pretty much it, folks. Tomorrow, I'll have another extensive review, particularly focusing on the big picture long-term outlook. All the best to all of you.